Now 6 o'clock, call to order the work session of the Fluvanna County Planning Commission at this time. Our first order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Right after that, we'll have a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you.
Next on the agenda is a planning director comments.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time except to welcome Mr. Wayne Stevens from the Public Works Department, who's with us tonight to give a presentation on utilities and potential ordinance changes that may be coming about in relation to our projects the county's working on right now, and also, time permitting, Mr. Newman will be giving a presentation on the I-2 district height text amendment.
Thank you.
If Mr. Stevens runs over, we may present that at the 7 o'clock meeting.
Okay.
Mr. Stevens has already informed me that he's aware that he was not going to run over.
Did you wave that same wand?
No, I told him that the Nats game comes on 6:30.
Okay.
I trust that Mr. Stevens will be brief and brilliant as usual.
Next thing is public comment. At this time, anyone wanting to come forward, you're limited to 3 minutes. Anyone to come forward to say anything about anything that's going on in the county regarding the Planning Commission, please come forward, state your name and address. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment section and we'll go right to the work session.
Before I get into our discussion about existing system, it's on here, so we'll cover this. Everyone is aware of the existing water and sewer systems we already have in the county. They're all small. Some of them are minuscule. But we have the Fork Union Water System, which is basically operated by the Fork Union Sanitary District. There's about 470 customers on that. We have what we're calling the Pleasant Grove West Water System, which is basically the Pleasant Grove House, a little, what they call, convenience center, restrooms, and then the yard hydrants and things that are around the pole barn. Pleasant Grove East Water System comprises the library and the Sheriff's Department, and we actually have a small permitted water system permitted by the state for this building right here, independent and separate from the Aqua Virginia Water System that serves the rest of the village of Palmyra. And then, of course, we have our Zion Crossroads Water System, which I'll go ahead and tell you, we received 95% complete plans from the engineer for Zion Crossroads Water and Sewer Systems just last week. I've got them under review. Got a fair number of comments on them, but nothing too serious. I'm going to be meeting with the engineer on Thursday to discuss the last changes that need to be made from a technical standpoint. And we expect to be going to the board next Wednesday to obtain permission to move forward and go to bid, basically, when the plans are ready. The way it's been structured, the board has been approving the funding for each phase of it, and so we're in keeping with that. We're going to be going to get basically the funding allocated to move forward to go to bid and build the thing. There are also two other small water systems that are run by the schools, one at the high school, one at the middle school. Existing county-owned sewer systems, there we go. We have a small wastewater treatment plant right across the river on a parcel that was obtained by Mr. Zaylor a number of years ago. That's a just under 40,000 gallon per day wastewater plant. And recently, within the last 2 years, the county took over the two wastewater treatment plants that were run by the schools. That was part of an effort between the county and the schools, both the boards and the administrators, to try to get the schools to where they're doing things that are more school related and less utilities related. So right now Public Works operates both of those wastewater treatment plants, and then of course we'll have the sewage collection and conveyance system in Zion Crossroads. Here's where everything's located. The little mushroom shaped thing there at the bottom is the actual boundary of the Fork Union Sanitary District. So anybody within that boundary is eligible to hook up to the water system as long as we have capacity. We have no sewer down that way. Okay, so we have very minimal rules and standards for hooking up to and using water and sewer systems. And a large part of it, I think, is because we just don't have very large water and sewer systems, and there's not a lot of demand for people to hook up to them. And it's been kind of just a laid-back procedure in the past. But if you're going to run a proper water and sewer system, you really need to have some policies and procedures and regulations in effect that govern who can connect, who must connect, and the procedures and schedules they go through. Very similar to getting a site plan approved. You would need to get these approvals for hooking up to the water and sewer systems. It'll be a little simpler for an individual house. It'll be more complicated for a shopping center or a large business. But we need to have some developer services procedures. That would be the rules for new and existing developments and customers. Set of rules and regulations that govern the use of the public water and sewer systems. Now, these we already have some in place, and that's the rules about what you can put down in the sewer system and what you can't. One of the big things we're lacking is a utility standards manual, which defines the types of equipment and materials and methods you must use when you're installing water and or sewer lines and or facilities that are going to be taken over by the county. And then last and probably most important, we need to have a schedule of rates, fees, and charges for what we're going to charge people when they hook up, what their monthly fees are going to be, what the rates are going to be for the water and sewer. We have these in effect. Water rates for Fork Union Sanitary and sewer rates for Palmyra, but they're specific to those systems. What we're probably going to be working towards is coming up with an overall universal water and sewer rate that can support all of our systems. We already have a cross-connection and backflow policy that's not bad at all, and we already have a pre-treatment ordinance which sets requirements for things like industrial facilities that may want to discharge into your system. We're going to try not to have any of those, but we do have a pre-treatment ordinance that gives their treatment requirements for anybody that may end up doing that. That's actually all the slides that I have. I just wanted to let you know I've been working with Jason and with our new building official, Kevin, in reviewing some of the things that I've already written. And the important thing that we're going to be doing is as we go through some of the changes that Jason's working on in the planning and zoning end of things, we will be, I will be working with them to try to make sure that what we recommend to be approved regarding water and sewer regulations and policies and procedures meshes with the county's other ordinance regarding land development. Definitely the time of site plan approval or subdivision approval, that's the time when you want to make sure that the developers are giving you the correct sets of types of plans for water and sewer, and that's what we're going to be aiming to do. But you'll probably be seeing some of this stuff across your desks in the coming days.
Can you talk a little bit about what other jurisdictions you've worked with do in relation to subdivision ordinance with these policies and ordinances and procedures?
Well, most of my experience is with an authority. And an authority has a different relationship with the county government than a department of utilities. But typically, the water and sewer entity, whatever it is, reviews plans at the same time and in parallel with the planning and zoning folks. All these things that I noted before are the four areas where water and sewer standards and regulations and policies and procedures need to mesh with what the county is doing. And we've discussed lots of different things, the rates, fees, and charges, whether they should be included on the zoning side or whether they should have a separate part of the ordinance that defines water and sewer rates, fees, and charges, and things like that. Some of it is still up in the air, and we're still working on it. But in my experience, you generally don't get your site plan approved until the water and sewer guys are happy, just like you don't get your site plan approved until VDOT is happy. And I really can't know whether I'm happy or not unless I have a set of guidelines to judge plans and things against. And I will say that I do know a fair amount of this about and have a lot of opinions on the standards regarding design and construction so that you have an end up with a high quality facility that will last a long time and not need excessive maintenance. But those things have to be vetted through probably you and the board and then adopted as policy or ordinance. Did you have anything specific, Jason, you wanted to cover?
I would just, I know we talked about Culpeper County and their site plan procedures, or was it Fauquier County? I just wanted to let the commission be more aware of like how we need to change our ordinance.
We've got, I'm going to have to go over if we're going to start talking about that. But
it's a whole other meeting to actually discuss ordinance change, but I'm generally.
In addition to having a fair amount of experience in water and sewer issues, I was a consulting engineer for civil engineering firms for about 12 years, and so I am familiar with designing subdivision plans and designing commercial site plans that are then submitted to a county or an entity for approval. And I've run site plans through Loudoun County, Prince William County, Fairfax City, Arlington, Culpeper, Fauquier, and actually a couple of places in West Virginia. But Fauquier County, to me, seemed to hit a middle ground. And if we're looking for someone to emulate or at least follow by example and look at, I think it would not be a bad place to look. Their procedures are rigorous but not onerous, and their rules are also rigorous but not onerous for the most part. I worked for the Fauquier Water and Sanitation Authority also, so I have experience in reviewing plans and things in that county as well, and I always was fairly impressed with it, as well as Culpeper does a fairly good job. I think some of our Northern Virginia neighbors go a little bit overboard in their requirements and their, I guess, restrictions, if you would, on people's property rights and things like that. But right now, I think Fluvanna is probably a little bit too lax, in my personal opinion. I've seen some of the I've been going around with Roger Black to a few subdivisions to look at different issues as the county engineer, not as your public works director. But there's some things that have gone on in some of the past subdivisions that were approved here that I think could have been prevented by having a better set of requirements for what people have to present to you to represent what they plan on building. And
are we planning on having a water and sanitary authority, or are we planning on having a combination of public works and planning handle this?
Well, that's a good question. I honestly don't know, and it's almost entirely up to the Board of Supervisors ultimately what happens. Now, as far as what I've recommended to them, and I've discussed this with Mr. Payne as well, right now I think the best thing to do is to simply have sort of a quasi-Department of Public Utilities that lies within the Public Works.
And the rate schedule that you talked about, would that be something that would the Board of Supervisors
They would set? End up needing to set those and adopt those. A few years out, and I don't know exactly how long, but as it starts to get more complicated and you have more customers and you have more personnel and manpower needed to take care of these systems, I would foresee us breaking utilities away from public works and having it be an independent county department answering directly to the county administrator. Right. And then, still a little further down the road, I honestly think that the best thing to do would be to have an authority. I think the authorities help take some of the politics out of water and sewer, and they also have a lot more flexibility in how they can finance projects and what they can do. There's almost no instance of an authority wanting to build a project. In fact, I can't think of a single one where they have to go out to a referendum to get a vote from anybody. They manage it almost the way a business is managed. And for water and sewer type things, I think that's probably a good way to do it. Mr. Payne and I have discussed perhaps accelerating even the formation of an authority a little faster than we originally anticipated, but I don't see it happening anytime in the next couple of years.
Yeah, I agree with what he's just told you, the outline of what he's told you. Let me make a couple other comments. We actually have an authority, a water and sewer authority, in Fluvanna County now. It's the James River Water. James River Water Authority. And it's the one that's heading for
But that's a combination with the Louisa County, right?
It's what I would describe as a wholesale authority. So you can't go and hook your house up to their line. It's a wholesale line only, has two customers. It's the Louisa Water Authority and Fluvanna County. But the concept is not entirely foreign to them because we do have this authority in existence. The other entity that we have we provide these services is FUSDI. FUSDI is a sanitary district. And a sanitary district is a very odd thing. It's kind of, I think Wayne used the word either obsolete or archaic or something people use to describe me.
Are those created by the General Assembly?
No. No, they're not. There's a procedure, and I can't tell you.
It's basically a petition from people that live in the proposed district.
Understand what's important to know about it, the sanitary district. It is not a separate entity from the county. It is a taxing district within the county. And it's Wayne's words, I forget which word he used, it was archaic or obsolete, but it's an old form that people used in the days when counties had very limited authorities. And it really is kind of obsolete now because it's kind of awkward dealing with things. There are very strict borrowing limitations, but its governing body is the governing body of the county. So you don't have a separate entity. In the case of an authority, it's a separate corporation. It's actually chartered by the State Corporation Commission like any other corporation. It's not a stock company, of course. It has members, and the members are, depending on the situation, generally they're appointed by
the state. In addition to being, it's
no, it is, it is, and generally the members are appointed by the Board of Supervisors. And of course, with JRWA, it's a little different because we have two counties as members, so there's different membership appointment procedures. The third one is what Wayne was talking about with the county providing the services itself, and whether you call it a public utilities department or whatever you call it, it's the county directly. And one of the major differences between the county and the service authority is, as Wayne said, the financing is run more like a business. And the reason is because it is a business. And there is no procedure for an authority the way there is for a county to have a referendum on bonded indebtedness. And there's a reason for that. The reason is that the Constitution requires a referendum for any debt that a county incurs that extends beyond the existing fiscal year. But that's only debt that binds the full faith and credit of the county. So if the county had there are some exceptions to the rule, like VPSA and VRA, things like that, where there's the entity actually borrowing the money is a state agency, and we get the money from the state agency. So that's an exception to the rule. In the case of a service authority, what it would do is it would issue its bonds, and a lot of them might be the same entities. It might be VRA or VPSA or whatever. But they do not bind the full faith and credit of the county. So if we had the Fluvanna Service Authority and we were going to have a project in Cunningham, the authority goes out and borrows the money to pay for the project, and it pays for it out of its revenues. So it does it essentially the same way that a business corporation would do. So it's much more flexible. Now, it doesn't have the kind of credit that at least a small authority wouldn't have the kind of credit that the corresponding county would have, because it doesn't have the assets behind it. But revenue bonds are not required to have a referendum. That's why that's the case. Now, just for example, in the case of JRWA, the financing obtained by JRWA is supported by pledges from the two counties. So since it doesn't have any revenue, it's just a startup, doesn't have any revenue, the counties have pledged, let's say, what is Mr. Nichols' phrase, pinky swear? Let's say it's a moral obligation. I think that's one term they use of the counties to support their authority. But after that, after it gets up and running, it'll have an income stream, and the income stream will go to support the indebtedness. And so one of the things that happens is when the rates are set, it's set intentionally to support that revenue stream. So I think Wayne's exactly right. What we've discussed, what he and I have discussed, and I think this is prudent, is we're sort of dipping our toe in the pool, and I think that using the counties, Department of Utilities, or whatever you want to call it, is perfectly adequate for that purpose. Now, as we get bigger and more more employees, more extensive, more need for expansion, that kind of thing, it will probably become appropriate and economical to think about an authority. The one thing that is significant about an authority is that there is a, I don't remember what the exact requirement is, but that is subject to approval by the populace. And you don't necessarily need a referendum, but as I recall what it is, if the Board of Supervisors wants to establish an authority, it has to hold a public hearing, and any citizen can challenge that decision, in which case it has to go to a referendum. So there are people that don't think it's a good idea, and it's conceivable we might have to go to a referendum, something like that.
Well, the Fork Union Sanitary District, that's a county entity. That's not a service authority.
No, sir, it is not an authority.
Correct. It's a taxing district of the county itself.
We would, as part of all this, receive, you know, folding all of the public utility entities that the county is associated with eventually into whatever utilities department or authority came about. And there are ways that can be done with the sanitary district, even without abolishing the sanitary. You could leave the sanitary district as a line on the map, and the county could simply purchase all of its assets for the amount of money that it is indebted.
Or it actually could do something even short of that. And this is something we've talked about too, and that is let's say the county utilities department has an excess of water supply, or it has sewer supply. It can contract with the sanitary district to supply water and or sewer services. So the service authority would still exist, it would still be operating, but the water and sewer would actually be supplied by the county.
Mr. Stevens, the comprehensive plan, I believe, calls for a master water and sewer plan. Would that be something that make recommendations on the organization?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Especially when we're starting at ground zero, the way this county more or less is, that might be one of the very first things that you have your the entity that you're going to have to do this master water and sewer plan approach would be making recommendations on segueing from, well, almost nothing to public utilities that are still overseen by public works to an independent department to an authority or whatever the recommendation is. Because, the way you go about, getting financing and constructing things is affected by the type of entity that you're operating. Most of my experience that was with the Fauquier Authority, and I can say that in the 14 years that I worked there, it never took a subsidy from the county. However, when I went to work there, it had already been in existence for about 20 years. And my understanding is that a lot of times when authorities are in their infancy, they do get a county subsidy until they, quote, get on their feet and start making money from the redwood. And there's some arrangements that are done.
I think
Louisa is still actually subsidizing their authority. You can trust me, if I have anything to do with it, the number one goal is going to be to get financially independent as quickly as possible. I think Mr. Johnson's familiar with what we've been doing in Fuzzy, and so is Ms. Z, regarding a bit of a rate hike and some financial rearrangements that we've made to try to get Fuzzy back on its feet, and things have been looking pretty good there. So I'm optimistic and confident about where we're going on this, but we do have a lot of work that's not, you know, the fun part is designing the stuff and seeing the tanks go up and buildings go up. The non-fun part is working on these regulations and things, but that's something we're going to have to kind of bite the bullet on here in the next couple of months and probably get out of the way.
All right, we need to get this done so we're ahead of the game before the product is here.
Oh, absolutely, because I had a guy today ask me, well, how much? I want to prepay and reserve capacity in your new system. How much do I give you? I said, I don't know, because we don't have our rates, fees, and charges set up right now. But there is a lot of interest in the communities, particularly in the new Zion Crossroads system up there. People are waiting for something to happen. So we're going to be moving forward on this as quickly as possible, and I'll answer any questions you have, and I'm certainly willing to assist you, and I'll appreciate any assistance any of you can offer as we move forward.
Can you talk about the discussion that's happened at the board level about the water and sewer master plan, how the Planning Commission can anticipate?
I've got to be honest, you caught me off. I'm not sure I can remember the last time we actually talked about the water and sewer master plan. Our master plan's up here right now. I have a pretty good idea of how I'd like to see things develop, and I want to get, obviously, a consulting engineer on board to get their ideas and make sure I'm not going off the rails and taking you down the wrong path. But
that's what I wanted to relate, is that we're working on.
We are
putting the pieces in place to have a master plan.
It's we've got so much going on that for the last couple of years, it's been more important to try to get the Zion Crossroads, you know, thing designed and ready than it has been to concentrate on that master plan. Because we know right now we need to do that. Master plan will be based on expansions of that and then how we're going to get water and sewer into the other CPAs.
And I wanted to relate, we probably shouldn't wait to have a master plan to address the shortcomings of the ordinances.
No.
That's something we can do immediately while we're waiting on seeing the overall direction.
I can't remember. I don't think the specific money is set aside for that. But the board sort of acknowledged that we have to do it as directors.
But there's things we can do with our ordinances in preparation for eventually doing it.
Well, my thinking right now is I think we should go full force in developing all of these procedures and so forth right now, because so many times we've got stuff developed and then we come back with the regulations and that's not always the best way to do.
It's the wrong way to go about it.
Well, one thing that Wayne was saying, the fellow that came in and wanted to reserve capacity, that's something that we need to have as a policy and regulation, is how are we going to allow people to reserve capacity? And that's perfectly common to do that, but the question is, how do you do it? For example, how much can you reserve? How much is that going to cost, of course? How long does a reservation last? Is it forever, or is it 5 years, 2 years, whatever it might be? Is it limited to area? All that kind of thing. It's perfectly common to have in other localities to say we either have or will have excess capacity, and we'll allow you to reserve X DU, dwelling unit equivalents, for proposed development, and you pay for that. You pay for it in advance, and then when you develop your subdivision, you're going to be paying for the hookups themselves.
It's very common for first of all, on a reservation like that, it's typically tied to a given parcel, because you don't want people moving this stuff around, because that can mess up your master plan, because if everybody all of a sudden wants all the capacity in one end of the system and you've only got an 8-inch line running down there, you make the master plan match, and if somebody that owns the parcel comes in and says, well, I think I'm going to be building a restaurant here, so I want to reserve enough capacity to be able to build a restaurant, you kind of do an estimate of what they'll need, then they can pay for it, and you keep records, it's tied to the property, and then very often there's a monthly carrying charge for it, so you don't have to worry about how long they keep it, as long as they're paying this minimal charge,
well,
that capacity remains reserved for them.
You may want to put limits on it, because you don't want to have somebody come in and say, I want to reserve it for my restaurant, and there are lots of other people that want to develop too, and he says, well, you know, my grandson's going to develop this restaurant, yeah. I wanted to have it for him 20 years from now. You don't necessarily want to tie everything up. Now, you might not be a problem for some of it, depending on how much capacity you've got.
Well, I will tell you that in Faulkner County, what we used to do is we, first of all, when we were setting our rates, very, very scrupulous about trying to separate the fixed operating costs of the facilities from the variable operating costs. And fixed operating costs are charged as base service fee each month. It's just divided up, but depending upon how much capacity you have, it's fixed operating costs divided by number of connections equals your monthly charge. The variable operating costs, which are based on how much water you're pumping or producing, are what becomes your water rates, your dollars per 1,000 gallons of water used. And what we would do is when someone reserved the capacity, they'd start paying that fixed operating cost monthly charge. So from the standpoint of us being the water and or sewer purveyor, we didn't really care whether they ever connected, because they were paying the amount of money it cost to carry their connection, whether they used any water or not. And then when they connected, of course, they began paying that base fee plus their usage. We found that to be the best way to do it, because we weren't trying to put any restrictions on what they could reserve. It was sort of a self-restricting thing. Somebody wouldn't buy more than they needed because it was relatively expensive to carry it, and they wouldn't try to carry it for 20 years because it would be relatively expensive to carry it without getting the return from whatever it was they were going to develop to use the water and sewer.
Who is responsible for, like, the line from our line to the business?
Typically, I wish the building inspector was here, because it's actually a little bit of a gray area. But typically,
that's one thing that's going to be defined by some of these policies.
And that's what we're going to define. Typically, there has been a long-standing agreement between the building official, the state building code officials, and the state health departments and DEQ on water and sewer issues, where on the water side, the building officials, it has purview from where it exits the meter box to the building. And the water purveyor has purview over the meter box and then the connection back to the main, and then obviously all the publicly owned water lines. On the sewer side, it can get a little bit more gray, because what you usually try to do is you make people put a clean out right at their property line, and then the sewer authority or utility provider would be responsible for that sewer lateral from the clean out to the main, and the building official has purview from that clean out to the building.
The same thing is true for who owns and who's responsible for the line.
Right, the owner is responsible for repairs on his side of the meter,
and so that
and
means
on his side of that clean out, and right, the authority would be responsible for.
That means if the line is leaking on the upstream side of the meter box, it's the utility's problem. If it's on my side of the box, it's my problem.
If it's in the box?
Speaking as a guy who's replaced a water line before.
If it's in the box, it's usually the water provider that takes care of it, because we don't want people rooting around in meter boxes themselves. But that can be a little bit of a gray area, because, you know, some people go, well, we can write at the meter. Okay, fine. You know, we'll fix it. And that's all part of operating the water sewer system. You run across that sort of thing. But what we're looking to do is get these policies and procedures in effect before we start having a rash of new customers come onto the system. And I would like to get things as long as it's legally able to be done and the board is in agreement, so that these same policies apply countywide over all the systems that the county owns and operates.
Do we have to make a recommendation that the Planning Commission work with to put these regulations into the zoning?
No, we'll the staff will bring you those.
Okay.
And it'll be like anything else, any other amendment to the subdivision or zoning ordinances, they'll bring you what they think is appropriate. You get to decide whether to propose it as an amendment, and then it just goes through the process.
And you'll probably start seeing some things very soon.
And one of my assistant attorneys has been working on this for quite a while, and she's got a, I think you've seen her product. She's got a product recommending what we should have and how to implement it. We probably need to draft the ordinances themselves, but that's not a big job once we have a handle on what we're doing.
Sounds good.
You can expect us to come back soon with any zoning and subdivision related potential changes as it relates to this. Like Wayne said, we've been kicking it around for a couple of years in different iterations, so it's time to get the ball rolling.
Yeah, I don't have any questions.
One of the things that you're going to, when Wayne was talking, it reminded me of, what's the subdivision up on the hill, up on 15. That was one where they needed a full-scale public utility system, and their special use permits were conditioned upon establishing their availability of water. And the reason that they're now putting a conservation easement on that property was they couldn't get the water. And that's one thing that has been bandied about. You want to put a subdivision in, what proof do you have to show the county that you have the availability of water and sewer? And
would anybody have asked that question?
Well, one of the things that happened, and Mrs. Eager may want to correct me about this, but when we were dealing with the most recent full-scale overhaul of the zoning ordinance, one of the things that came up was, should we require a hydrogeologic study of the property before we approve development? And for various reasons, the election of the board was not to make that requirement. And you know, at that time may have been appropriate. It probably needs to be rethought at this point.
Well, now that he's brought that up, I actually have drafted a proposed hydrogeologic ordinance for just such these situations, which was where you're going to have community utilities outside the CPA. And that's kind of separate from the public county-owned things, because these things are going to end up being privately owned and privately taken care of, and the county isn't going to have as much to say about exactly how it's taken care of. But as far as the hydrogeologic part of it goes, again, using my past experience, they had fairly good ordinances up in Culpeper and Fauquier, which I guess the average developer down here might find it onerous because he's never had to do it before, but it was broken into a phase one and a phase two study. The phase two one study was mostly looking at maps and things like they were supposedly had done for this proper ridge thing, but then coming up with a report, and it had specific requirements for that report, and that would be required in order to get your rezoning, say. And then the phase two hydrogeologic report, which by no means required full development of wells or anything like that, was required to be submitted, reviewed, and approved prior to approval of the final subdivision plan. That's still floating around somewhere. I don't know if any of you have seen a copy of it or not, but I'll be happy to show it to you.
We'll be glad to let you all take a look at all the items that Mr. Stevens has been working on.
From experience of that particular one that we've been talking about, as much time as we spent on that, and I had looked back from reports made back in the 90s by a certain person who was their expert, which contradicted what they said. So, anyway.
Well, the good thing about having a little bit more detailed ordinance is it's very cut and dry. It's very clear what they have to submit. And then if they submit it, they've met your requirement. And
yeah, that's easy. What happened in this case was they had to get a special use permit for their public utility systems, water and sewer. And because it's a special use permit, we could condition the development on their satisfying Mr. Stevens and others that they could do what they wanted. What he's saying is you come in for that development after we've got these things in place, and it's just, we don't say anything about it, because the comprehensive plan presumably provides for the utilities in this area. The utilities are, you know, they say you've got to have such and such size line and these connections and so forth, and if you don't have the capacity, you can't get a building permit. So it'll I almost said it would simplify things, and in some very limited ways that's true, but to say that would not be accurate. It'll be a lot more complicated.
Well, I think
but it'll be a lot more upfront.
With as complicated as things are in the world now, and as much pressure as I predict this county is going to end up under in at least certain parts of it for development, I don't think there's going to be any way to keep things as simple as they used to be. I mean, there's going to have to be some complication added into this process.
Just because it's simple doesn't mean it's good.
But we need to be, reasonable about it, and I think we still need to always approach things from the standpoint that our job as the staff is to help people find a way to be able to successfully do the project they want to do within the rules that we have, unless they're simply asking for the impossible. Instead of looking at things and trying to find out what you can prevent them from doing. And anyway, that's all I have tonight, and I appreciate you listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be coming back with some more information soon. When you get into these sort of things, we may end up making changes along the way, but it's because of the complexity of what we're dealing with. For example, we may have different lot sizes contingent upon different availabilities of certain types of water systems or private wells. And that's one thing, other thing to think about. So there's all sorts of things that the Planning Commission needs to be aware of and as we're going through this process. But like I said, we'll be back with some more concrete drafts.
Are we going to go on to the utilities thing, and how long do you think that will be?
Not very long, I don't think. Be very long this morning. Yeah.
So we just got a few changes, basically, right?
Yes. Made some changes for industrial two. First one would be that there'd be no minimum side yard requirement except as otherwise required by law. And in most cases, the side yard requirement would be 50 feet. We do have an issue with the prison property, which is currently zoned A1. So we would get rid of side yard requirements for any industrial property that would be adjacent to one owned and operated by the Virginia Department of Corrections. Because that prison creates issues regarding setbacks for the local industrial and industrial two properties. So this will make it easier for industrial properties to have more land to develop on when they're adjacent to the prison.
While he's on this subject, I want to give you a mea culpa. When I wrote this ordinance, I left out a couple of words, and he just supplied them, but we need to add those to this draft. It should say, there shall be no minimum side yard requirement for any property adjacent to any property owned and operated by the Virginia Department of Corrections.
Instead of property owned, that should be adjacent to.
Right. It wouldn't make a lot of sense to have this language, because the Department of Corrections is exempt from our zoning anyway.
Well, the point of this is just to make it easier for all those industrial properties which surround the prison to have more room to develop, because currently the prison is zoned A1, and that infringes on their setbacks and their development space. Secondly, we've increased the building height from 45 to 70 feet. Anybody who wishes to exceed 70 feet would have to obtain a special use permit. This actually gives us an economic competitive edge over Louisa County. Louisa has a 60 feet tall limit. With the ability to get a special use permit, we would have ours up to 70 feet. And the reason for this change is because we have the ready mix factory would be at least 65 feet tall, and we thought we wanted us to go up to 70.
They've already anticipated an expansion just a little bit above 65. And just looking at the ordinances, it seems a little bit outdated and not in line with the
I think we discussed that in a previous meeting.
And finally, we've also struck out this section regarding the public and semi-public buildings being allowed to exceed 45 feet, because that's now null and void if our new height of 70 feet is put in place. So overall, we eliminate the yard restrictions for industrial properties adjacent to the women's prison, increase building height from 45 to 70 feet with a special use permit if they wish to exceed that, and we remove the language pertaining to the public and semi-public buildings, as that's really just null now if these changes are approved.
I agree with all of them.
Thank you.
I think we discussed this previously, and I think, what is that Wilson Ready Mix that actually...
It's just in line with us making our ordinances more competitive in the Zions Crossroads CPA.
That's it.
And we'll probably be coming back with some more of these type of things as we see more development come before us and make us aware of deficiencies in our ordinance.
And then we'll have a motion for you all during our regular session.
Okay, where will we bring that
new
up?
New business.
Under new business to bring up the motion. Okay. Do we have any other business for the work session? If we have no other business for the work session, we will recess till 7 o'clock and we will start our regular meeting at that time.
It just,
we'll see what happens.
Now 7 o'clock, we call to order the regular meeting of the Fluvanna Planning County Planning Commission for May the 9th, 2017. First order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
The next item of business is the director's report.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any items to report as far as board actions. We did have one BZA case that was withdrawn, and just wanted to note that two items on the agenda, ZTA 1701 and ZTA 1702, will be heard next month at our June meeting. Those public hearings will be scheduled at that time.
Okay. Thank you. The next thing is a first of two public comments sections for tonight. Anyone wishing to come before us to speak to anything involving the Planning Commission, things within the county, come to the microphone, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end our first public comment section for the night. Next item is the minutes of the April 11th, 2017 meeting. Do I have any motions or questions or additions, subtractions about the minutes?
I'll make the motion be approved.
I have a motion from Mr. Johnson to approval of the minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Lagnesina. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay, we have a public hearing for ZTA 1703, Junk Definitions Amendment.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. I'm going to give a brief staff presentation for Zoning Text Amendment 1703. In recent years, some of the definitions in the zoning ordinance that pertain to junk accumulation or storage have been found to be somewhat limited, have presented challenges to staff for enforcement. So as a result, Zoning Test Amendment 1703 is a request to amend Ordinance Section 22-22-1, which is the definition section of the ordinance. More specifically, amend the definitions, existing definitions for junk and junkyard, and then add new definitions for outside storage and storage yard. The proposed text will allow more flexibility, clarity, and promote effective enforcement. So on the screen are the two definitions that exist that are proposed to be amended. The text that you see in strike through is the existing language that would be removed, and it would be replaced with the underlying text on the screen. The top definition is the junk definition, and then the bottom one is the one for junkyard. You saw this text at a previous work session in April. Basically, the gist of the changes with these two definitions, just adding and listing more materials and items that were not previously included. And then on the screen are the two new definitions for outside storage and storage yard. And that concludes staff presentation. A sample motion is on the screen for your use.
Had one question.
Yes.
I know in some of our other ordinances, we had something about inoperable vehicles, and I think I asked this once before, and it used to be a limit of what I think it was 5. Does that take that out of
the That's not, that part's not changing. The county is looking at having a separate inoperative vehicle ordinance that's been discussed at the Board of Supervisors.
But right here in this ordinance here, it says any scrap, discarded, dilapidated, dismantled, inoperable vehicles.
But we also have a definition for automobile graveyard. What we were talking about would fall under the automobile graveyard section.
So in other words, say for say an instance, say a person that was restoring a vehicle and had several other vehicles that he was using parts off was just an individual, not a junkyard and so forth like that. With this ordinance, would he be in violation having them sitting on the property that he's using?
Probably have to screen it. But the other ordinance that Mr. Stewart is talking about, it won't be part of the zoning ordinance. It's a freestanding ordinance dealing with inoperable vehicles specifically.
Okay. So the ordinance that we already have about the 5 vehicles.
That's an automobile graveyard.
That is an automobile graveyard, okay.
That's where the 5 comes in as part of the definition.
Okay.
How, I think this is a question for you, Mr. Bain. How does this ordinance impact, somebody has something now, grandfathering, I guess, or there is no grandfathering. Somebody has something.
Yeah, there probably would be.
That would run afoul of this.
Somebody comes in and says, you know, let's say he's got 6 junk cars, and they've been there since 1968.
Right.
That's a non-conforming use.
Okay.
If he's got 6 junk cars that he brought in 2 years ago, he's in violation.
How would we, other than the age of the car, though, how would we be able to tell how?
That's an element of proof, and it can be more or less difficult. Usually what will happen is you'll have, sometimes you have photographs. You'll have particularly aerial photographs. But usually if somebody, these things are enforced by complaint. And in this kind of situation, what would frequently happen is you have a neighbor that would come in and say, I lived here before this fella did, and those junk cars weren't there when he moved in 3 years ago. That kind of thing.
We use Google or Street View.
Right.
These days.
Depending on how far off the road it is. But if it's vehicles, you can tell that just from Google Earth. You don't need.
Well, sometimes you can, but if you're back in the woods, you may not be able to. So. You know, you do, it's like any other regulatory case, you may be stuck with your burden of proof.
Or we could just, I guess, have the county buy us drones and fly them over the
You see Mr. Stewart salivating?
I'll trade in my iPad for my own drone. That'll be much more useful to me. I'm glad to.
Zoning drones.
Exactly. Got to have these things.
So in other words, you can get a drone, so when we have a zoning thing, you can fly it over. We can be on our computers watching it.
I probably would find a lot more than I would want to find.
We probably would.
If you'll forgive me the reminiscence, we did have a case involving an automobile graveyard many years ago. And let's say the owner wasn't real keen on having county inspectors come in. So we engaged a plane and took pictures out of the plane and took him to court. He was in circuit court, and we won on the basis of those pictures. It was a little bit of a challenge because it was a low-wing plane.
Mm-hmm.
So when they took the pictures, they had to bank the plane.
I've taken forestry pictures in the same thing. It's not good. It's not fun.
Yeah. It's easier with a high-wing plane.
Exactly.
This ordinance wouldn't affect people that have special use permits for vehicle repair that may have an impact.
No, because those
are legal uses.
Yeah, that's a specifically permitted use, and when you have a special use permit for that, the special use permit would set whatever requirements they've got. Typically, they'd address things like screening and things like that.
What if a person has several old inoperable, like lawnmowers, that they use for parts, and they keep them covered? Would that be something that would apply here?
It kind of depends on what he's doing. I wouldn't consider a excuse me. I wouldn't consider a lawnmower to be a vehicle under the terms of these.
Okay.
But well, if he's got a bunch of he's got a bunch of old junk machines.
If people are coming there and getting their lawnmowers worked on, and it's kind of a commercial operation, it can lead into other issues, potentially.
Yeah, you might have to store them inside or screen them or whatever it might be.
So like a lot of it just depends.
I was just looking at some of the stuff here, too, because there's a lot of, throughout the county, there's a lot of old farm machinery that sits on properties here and so forth like that, and some of people use it for decorations or they just like to kind of look at it and so forth like that. So I'm just trying to balance what is good, what's bad, and so forth like that.
Mr. Stewart is the zoning administrator, and he needs to exercise some judgment in these things. And I'll tell you, when he stops exercising judgment, we're going to have a conversation about that.
I've yet to get a formal complaint about a piece of farm equipment, including a county, in the 3.5 years I've been here.
I just know that there's a lot of that around at different places.
Yeah, that's not usually a problem because the farm machinery lasts a lot longer than a car does, typically. And if you get something that you can't repair anymore, you sort of tow it off in the woods somewhere and leave it, and nobody knows it's there.
If we wrote the laws so clear that they were easy to interpret, Fred wouldn't have a job, and then where would we be?
Then I'd have to go get a job as a bullpen catcher.
There you go.
That's honest.
Okay. Do we have any more questions? Do we have a motion?
We have to have a public hearing.
I'm sorry. I got thinking about all the stuff. I forgot about that. We'll open the public hearing at this time about the junkyard definitions, and anyone wishing to come forward and talk about this, please come forward to the microphone and state your name and address, please. Seeing no one coming forward, I will ask if there is a motion.
You're willing to.
I thought you would. I move that the Planning Commission approve the ZTA 1703, an amendment and accompanying resolution to the Fluvanna County Zoning Ordinance entitled an ordinance to amend Chapter 22, Article 22 of the Fluvanna County Code by amendments and addition of definitions to subsection 22-22-1 thereof to clarify definitions and support conformity with the 2015 comprehensive plan.
I just wanted to say that the motion should read recommend approval, not approve.
Recommend approval would be preferable language.
Okay.
Should we assume that that
should, yes,
you accept that?
I absolutely recommend approval for this particular.
Mr. Gaines recommends approval of ZTA 1703. Do I have a second?
Second.
Have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Okay. The next item is a presentation by Mr. Newman of the 2016 Development Activity Report. And I will, in advance of this, since I've already looked at it, make a compliment of how good a job he's done on this. So, and I would also, at the end of this, make a recommendation that we vote that this is our report for the year. We are required to have a report, and this is what we've done in the past.
Thank you, sir. Our annual development activity report includes information regarding development-related activities undertaken, approved, or reviewed by various departments and agencies, and it allows for land use comparisons and trends to be seen over time. It provides an indication of land use changes throughout the county. Our comprehensive plan, adopted in 2015, continues to influence and guide growth and development. 17,000 acres are located within our community planning districts. Our rural residential districts comprise just under 66,000 acres, and the vast majority of the county's acreage is within rural preservation, just under 110,000 acres. There were 113 building permits for new homes issued in 2016. This is a decrease from 2015. You can see they were almost evenly split between our community planning areas and our rural residential areas, with just a little bit of new homes being built in our rural preservation. So growth does appear to be being guided to areas that we have set aside for residential development.
You meant to say increase.
Increase, mea culpa. We have 19 new subdivision lots that were approved in 2016. This is a decrease from the 25 lots that were approved in 2015. The vast majority of the lots that were approved were family subdivision lots, a total of 13 family subdivision lots, and a total of 6 minor subdivision lots. And most of them are located within rural preservation planning areas, 53%. There were 18 site development plans that were reviewed, compared to 21 from 2015. And just over half of those site development plans that were reviewed were located within our community planning areas, which is the exact same as last year. We had 10 special use permits that were reviewed in 2016, and 6 of those were located within our rural residential or rural preservation areas. We had 7 rezoning applications, 5 of which were approved. There were 2 zoning text amendments that were approved, and 2 variances were granted by the Board of Zoning Appeals. We had at least 26 complaints in 2016 regarding code compliance, which were investigated. This is a decrease from the 39 complaints that were investigated in 2015. And out of those 26 complaints, 25 are resolved and 1 is still pending resolution. So I'd like to commend our code compliance officer for doing an excellent job on that, Mr. Scott Miller. Most of the complaints were located within the Columbia, Cunningham, and Palmyra districts. There were no violations in Rivanna.
Question?
Yes, sir.
Actually, no. I'll let you go ahead and finish.
Okay. There were 19 agriculture and forestal districts that comprise roughly 10.6% of the county. We had no new agricultural forestal districts in 2016. And according to the figures that we received from the Commissioner of Revenue's office, approximately 57% of Fluvanna County is enrolled within the land use taxation program. Any questions, sir?
Yes. In our package, we used to get a code compliance report Was that during your time, or maybe...
Now, you mean as part of the overall package again?
Yes, as
like
a part of the...
Like the building report and
yes.
other stuff, the monthly ones?
Yes.
We can look into including that back again if you'd like.
Okay.
And then I have a motion for the commission.
Do we have a motion to approve or deny or defer the 2016 Development Activity Report?
I make a motion to approve the 2016 Development Activity Report as submitted.
Okay, I have a motion by Mr. Lagansino. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. We don't have any site development plans or subdivisions. We do have some unfinished business, the Columbia zoning update by Mr. Robinson.
All right, hello again, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. Just gonna give a brief update on the zoning effort in Columbia. You should recall earlier this year, back in January, we came before you with a draft of a zoning survey to survey the citizens in that area. So based on some work with the county attorney's office, we collaborated with them after that meeting to kind of update the survey a little bit, and that survey was finally sent out in towards mid-March. There were a total of 46 surveys or 46 properties that were notified and mailed the survey. Since the survey was mailed, we have received 17 responses back. I will note that one of those responses is a duplicate. For whatever reason, one of the owners filled out two surveys and sent us two copies. The survey, as you remember, there were six questions total. The first three were yes or no questions. The fourth one was a select A, B, or C question. And then the last two were just fill in the blank, just answer. And so of the 16, basically, as I said, there are 17 responses, one is a duplicate. So basically, you can say that we've received 16 responses to the survey. Of those 16 responses, seven of them own multiple parcels. So this map reflects the 16 or 17 respondents. As I said, seven of them own multiple parcels, so if you were to count for those, a couple of more of the parcels would be highlighted. For example, one of the property owners owns multiple parcels right along Route 6 on the south side there. So the first question on the survey was, are you the owner of the property? All of the respondents indicated yes, they were the owner of the property. The second question was, do you know what your property is currently zoned? Nine respondents answered yes, they did. Seven respondents answered no. One person wrote a comment beside their response and said it should be commercial.
Incidentally, it's a trick question because none of them are zoned.
That's what I was going to say.
The third question on the survey was, do you think a different zoning would better suit your property? Several respondents answered yes. Eight respondents answered no. One respondent did not respond at all, did not enter a response. And again, one person added a comment to their response and said yes with reservation. Whatever that means. Question four was, would you like your property, one, zoned for more intensive uses, two, zoned for less intensive uses, or three, kept as is? Five respondents indicated they wanted more intensive zoning, one indicated they wanted less intensive zoning, and eight respondents said to keep the zoning as it is. There were two comments. Both of the comments did not enter a response to this question. One said make the zoning the same as the St. Peter and Paul Catholic Church. I will know that that response came from one of the churches that received the survey. So they said to make their zoning the same as that Catholic church mentioned on the screen. The other respondent just said uncertain, and they didn't indicate whether they wanted more or less or keep the same. Question five, this was an open-ended question where they could just enter whatever they would like. So on the screen are all 16 or 17 responses we received. I believe it's 16. So the fifth question asks, what sort of development, if any, would you like to see in and around Columbia? I'll just try to highlight some of these quickly. The first one talks about how the town is run down. The houses and buildings closest to the river need to be torn down. Second response said they would like to see a shopping center, a convenience store, a brewery, a restaurant. Third response, no homes or development in the floodplain. Fourth response is similar, they'd like to see commercial food service or office space. Fifth response is kind of similar, we would like to see all the housing on Route 6 removed, turned into a park. And the sixth response, the entrance to the county should not look the way it does now. There are better places for low-income housing. This riverfront town can and should be restored by the county. More comments talk about...
I just wanted to add that these responses are written as you received them.
Yes, they are. So no changes were made to the spelling or any wording.
Your staff's literacy is not in question from this report, let's put it that way.
More responses talk about the raising of dilapidated buildings, general cleanup. I think the person meant to write condemned housing, but I put it on the screen exactly as how they wrote it. Condemned housing on Main Street being enforced to knock down. The next response, didn't really understand that one. Another response talks about no public housing. Recreational opportunities. Another response, I obviously would like to see the town improve, return to some of its former glory. Another response, maybe they'd like to see gas stations, something celebrating the town's history, like Scottsville, Canal Basin Park, maybe railroad history. Another comment about develop cleaner streets, tear down old houses, put more sheriffs in town. And they'd like to see residential and mixed development. And then the last question, another open-ended question where they could write in whatever they'd like. There were 14 responses received to this question. Two respondents did not enter anything. They left it blank. Again, a lot of the responses are very similar, talking about making recreational opportunities, lower park made into a nice park. Even though the town is in the floodplain, all the drunks, riffraff should be made to vacate, spend money to clean up the town or tear it down. One person was concerned that the Columbia Task Force hadn't met in 2 years. The historic district should have happened 15 years ago. Safety of structures in the floodplain. Concern with the drug use and sales connected to the substandard housing in the town. Columbia Town Hall property should be zoned the same as St. Joseph's Church. Another comment about the old houses on Main Street are a real health hazard with all the trash around them. Another comment about drinking and partying on Main Street, a huge problem. Another comment there, we see no benefit to, I don't know what they were intending to write there. Or encouraging low-income housing in Columbia. There's no public transportation, no shopping, no services of any kind. Again, the similar comment, floodplain in the lower elevations of the town. Part of the town is prone to flooding, and one person was pleased to hear that some of the buildings in bad shape will be demolished, and hope this, along with the Cobbs Creek Reservoir, will help revitalize the town. So that's basically the gist of the survey and all the responses we received. This is a map that you should remember seeing at the work session earlier this year back in January. So this is jumping back to staff's thoughts on the direction on the zoning should go. Basically, it's been thought about keeping everything basically up on the hill, keeping that residential. It's out of the floodplain for the most part. everything along Route 6 and maybe encouraging some business zoning in that area, so that's what's recommended on the map there.
Has the county acquired those four buildings that they're planning to...
We're in process. We have contracts.
In process now. When do you hope maybe you can get started on
it? On the demolition?
Yes.
I don't remember when we're supposed to close. It's this summer.
You don't think you'll have to condemn them then?
No, we have contracts. We have signed contracts for all of them.
Good.
I think there are seven parcels actually.
Oh, okay.
Four buildings.
I think there's four buildings, but there some of them straddle property lines and things like that.
So it actually, it's seven, but I think what we saw before.
No, hold me to that. I think it's seven.
It was listed as four in the past, so.
Yeah, I think it's four buildings, but I think it's seven parcels, maybe six parcels. There's one parcel that we are not planning to acquire that we originally were, and the reason is because it doesn't appear that one of these buildings actually is on this property, and it's got hideous title problems. Mm-hmm. So it was just not, our recommendation is not to do that. There are a couple others that we're talking about acquiring that do not have houses on them, buildings on them, but for one reason or another, we're going to try to get those incorporated into the grant and acquire those because they form logical extensions of the other properties and things.
When does the grant run out if you don't exercise it? When does it run out?
I think it's the first of the year. I'd stand to be corrected on that, but that's why we're shooting to do these things this fall, summer and this fall. Mr. Chairman, let me give you a couple clarifying comments here that you may be interested in. One thing is, as those of you that know Columbia know, there's a stream that runs right through the middle of town, mm-hmm. and that's where the floodplain is. So it kind of defines the floodplain. And so a lot of the, you can basically see it right there, it's Columbia Creek. And it really doesn't make any difference what you zone those properties because they're not going to be developed anyway because they're in the floodplain. Some people would question the A1 designations down beside the river. And I got a cute little interesting historical tidbit for you. And that is, shortly after the town was incorporated, the original charter provided for sale of the lots in the town, but the owner forfeited title if he didn't improve the lot within a specific time. I think it was a year. He had to build on it. And there was a petition that went to the General Assembly to delete these lots that we have now zoned A1. To delete them from the town on the ground that they flooded too often and nobody could build on them, or nobody would build on them. And that clouded the title because that way if you bought the lot and didn't build on it, it was subject to being forfeited. So I would say we have historical precedent for A1 zoning in that area. That's just a little historical tidbit for you.
And we have current practical precedent. You can't do anything there.
So. Well, I mean, you could look at it.
So I like them both. It's got two good reasons. Yeah. So the 100-year floodplain is in the darker section, not the light.
You can see the contour line.
This right through here.
Yeah.
You can see the contour line.
Yeah, that's the reason.
Yeah, when I saw that truck terminal down there, you know, where the guy's working with the equipment and all that stuff, where the old depot is.
Mm-hmm. Mr.
We
Shelley.
Had the attorney to run, they had the attorney, had the surveyor to run roughly where the flood line, you know, where it went to and so forth.
Yeah, we have a map that shows.
Do you have that? Yeah. He actually went in and I think ran levels on the property, though.
Yeah, an engineer could do that, but he would do that based on our official map.
Mr. Payne, what would be your recommended next step towards addressing the zoning situation there?
Well, what needs to happen is that There are three ways to amend the zoning map: by motion of the resolution of the Board of Supervisors, motion of the Planning Commission, or by application from the owner of the property. Obviously, the third is not appropriate in this case because we're talking about multiple owners, multiple properties. So what we're going to need to do is we're going to have a motion by either this commission or the Board of Supervisors to zone these parcels. Now, notice that when I don't say rezone, I say zone, because currently there is no zoning on these properties except for the floodplain.
Would this be done by one public hearing for multiple properties regardless of zone?
Yeah, you could do that.
Would this be more appropriate for the Board of Supervisors to do, since they took the town into the, by act of Board of Supervisors, they took the town of Columbia into the county?
I don't think that's a controlling issue, really. Right now, this property is just like any other property in the county, except that no other property in the county is not zoned.
So if this goes through the Planning Commission, is it just like any other recommendation that then is approved by the Board of Supervisors?
Yeah.
I mean, I would suggest this is the job of the Planning Commission.
I agree.
This is why we exist. So
I only wanted to ask that other question because of the ramifications of that. I think that the Planning Department should come back to us with a recommendation for us to consider and to send on to the Board of Supervisors.
One thing,
and I would suggest this is that recommendation, maybe. This looks pretty good.
One thing you're going to see is that our GIS map had some, and Mr. Newman can elaborate on this, our GIS map had some significant inaccuracies with respect to property lines. And some of that was because of some decisions that our contractor made that weren't justified legally. And in the course of this acquisition project we've had in the former town, we've had some amendments to our GIS map to make it better. One thing that is remarkable about this situation is that it's really easy to survey these lots because the town does have a recorded plat and there are dimensions on it and courses and distances and all this kind of stuff. So things like the railroad, there's actually a recorded map which was prepared by and for the railroad in roughly 1879. That shows exactly the dimensions of the railroad and things like that. So it should be a good deal easier for our staff to designate these parcels than it would be in a typical just area, general area of the county. The designations from the tax map are not always exactly right, but they're pretty close. And one thing you may want to notice is that If you look through the map, you'll see areas that designate the streets, and those do designate the streets on the plat. Most of them are not developed, but they are public streets. So if you're wondering why, for example, there's a difference between the agriculture and the BC when it goes down the streets. That's one possible reason.
Are those technically county right-of-way?
Yes, those are public streets, the right-of-way of which is owned by the county, but the ownership of the properties runs to the center line of the streets.
So
there was another peculiarity about the charter of the last charter of the town of Columbia, and that was there was a specific provision that if you had built a building in one of the streets, you didn't have to tear it down as long as people could get by. I've never seen that before.
Okay. So when are you planning on bringing actual proposals for this zoning to us?
We can bring it as soon as possible.
Do y'all recommend that the planning department bring that to us as soon as possible so we can get Columbia?
I mean, I think the folks in Columbia would see any tiny, tiny bit of progress as something really good to see. So this isn't a lot, but it's a step in the right direction.
Well, you know, that's when Mr. Robinson was going through the survey, I was sort of ticking off in my mind the things we either have already done or in the process of doing. The obvious one is the acquisition of these properties. Because a year from now, it's going to look considerably different than it does now. I don't envision there's any real use for those properties or a number of others that are vacant other than something like open space or park or informal park or something like that. But that's part of the cleanup. Some of the other things that the staff and the board are considering doing in connection with all areas of the county, but particularly Columbia because it's more acute there, are some things relating to trash, derelict buildings, overgrown vegetation, things like that. We're in the process of developing some ordinances to deal with that. And you notice one of the things was about one of my old partners used to describe as the likely lads that hang out on the streets. The sheriff has asked for a couple of amendments to the county code that would help with that. And one of the things is possession or consumption of alcohol in public places, like in the streets or sidewalks or whatever. Mm-hmm. Sheriff thinks that'll be helpful here. And the other thing has to do with trespassing. So I don't know if we got all of them, but we got quite a few of the provisions of the survey are in process of being addressed.
Isn't that something that's coming to us soon or something? I saw something about that. I read something about it.
Well, some of the stuff, it won't be coming to you.
Okay.
Like the stuff about the alcoholic beverages, that's the Board of Supervisors hasn't acted on that yet, but they've initiated the process and the trespassing thing as well.
By us adding, or I guess zoning Columbia for the first time in ever?
No, that's not true. Okay. Columbia had a zoning ordinance. Town of Columbia had a zoning ordinance. But somehow it got lost. And the last time I was looking at it when we were talking about, disestablishing the town, and we could find snippets of the town code, but not a whole thing.
Okay.
At one point, I had a copy of it, and,
okay,
and it was fully zoned. It was pretty basic, but it was really not, conceptually, not unlike what you see here.
Okay. Their taxes aren't going to go up by us adding zoning. There's not going to be a precipitous tax increase for them, will it?
Who knows? It's a question of what the market determines. It might, because it might be that right now there isn't any zoning,
mm-hmm,
other than the floodplain zoning. So if somebody came in and bought one of these high ground lots, there's no real limitation on what he could do with it. So he could put in a
skyscraper.
We'll ignore that comment.
We'd be glad to have it. We'd be glad to have it. Bring folks to
a blacksmith shop, something really obnoxious.
Glad to have that.
They could do that. Yeah, they'd be glad to put most anything. But at one point when they were, I think this was before the charter was actually given up, but at one point there were inquiries being made about putting in a trailer park.
But the act of zoning is not going to necessarily raise people's taxes. I think that was the point of Don's question.
I can't really say that one way or the other, because it might be that, let's say somebody owns a parcel in the yellow area, mm-hmm. that's residential, and let's say it's one of the nicer residential areas. Well, right now, the neighbor next door could you know, come in and put, you know, old broken down trailers on it or something, or you know, a chemical factory or whatever. If we zone it, then that person would have some assurance that it's going to be developed only residentially. So I don't mean to be ducking your question, but right. It's possible that it could have that effect, but not necessarily. One of the things in the survey said that assessments are too high, and some of them obviously are too high. I mean, we're talking about, you know, 50-foot wide lot, 155 or 60, something like that, and 100 feet deep, and it's in floodplain. That isn't worth $5,000. I'm making up those numbers, but that's about what they are. But one thing, you won't lose your lot if you farm your low ground here instead of putting a house on.
Well, I still think that the majority of the actual residents are going to be happy with this. Maybe not all the slumlords are going to be happy with this, but the residents will be happy, and I think they'll see this as progress. And if value of their lot goes up a little bit because of zoning, I don't think that's going to be an impediment.
I think you're right, Zimmer.
And a lot of your tax valuation stuff is based on what properties have sold near that property in a length of time and so forth too. So
yeah, remember one thing about it, Mr. Gaines and everybody else, but specifically in answer to your question, tax assessments by virtue of the Constitution, not just the statutes but also the Constitution, must reflect fair market value. That's it's a mandate for every property in the county. The mass appraisals are not necessarily mass appraisals for assessments are kind of a blunt instrument sometimes, and they may not be exactly right, but that's the lodestone. So if parcel X is assessed at $8,000 and nobody's going to buy it because it's in the floodplain, if that person challenged that assessment, he would probably win. It would probably be reduced. And the question is, what would it be used for? I won't say it's nothing, but it certainly wouldn't be. You're certainly not going to build a skyscraper on it.
And you can appeal. I mean, it's that's right. Standard procedure. Anybody have any other questions? When will we have something come before us about this too?
We can try to get something for you all to make a to initiate a zoning resolution next month.
Okay.
If at all possible, we'll do that.
Any more questions?
I'd just like to comment and say, based on the responses received to the survey, it would be a little difficult to try to capture everybody's desires who responded. You'd end up having some of the lots that said they want more intensive zoning are in the yellow area up on the hill, which I think from a staff perspective, we prefer that stay residential area.
Well, of course, the problem is when they say they want more intensive zoning, they don't know that there is no zoning. So my guess is
they're going to have more intensive zoning, even if it's A1. It's more intensive than nothing.
My guess is that if they knew they didn't have any zoning, and this R4, which is a sort of a low to medium density residential, that would probably be what they had in mind. Just for your information, the lots in Columbia, some have been re-subdivided, but the lots in Columbia are they're 165 feet deep, and I don't remember the exact dimensions, but they're roughly rectangular 2-to-1, approximately.
Just to make sure we cover those folks, though, who responded to the survey and have kept a vested interest in this over the last few years, can we make sure we send a notice, an email maybe, to the count, what's the task force, and maybe mm-hmm. the Interfaith Council, or the folks who have continued to express an interest in this?
Well, that's a good idea, but in addition, the statute does have different requirements when you're having a multi-parcel rezoning, or in this case, zoning. So there's going to be plenty of notice.
Okay. But the more we can make sure folks get the word.
Notice will go to each property owner?
Right.
Yeah, it's got, and I don't remember exactly what the requirements are, but it's specific for multi-parcel zoning.
We did make an effort to try to go a little bit above and beyond during the process. One of the owners who was right along Route 6 owns probably about 8 or 9 parcels. When we hadn't heard from him, we gave him a call and asked him about completing the survey, and then he went ahead and sent it in to us.
He's going to have fewer pretty soon.
Is that any more questions? Thank you. Okay. Next thing is new business. I think it's going to be about the I-2 height zoning text amendment and a recommendation and a motion.
Since you're giving the presentation, we just have the motion for the Planning Commission.
Okay. During our work session, we had a presentation about this, and we went over it. Do I have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, please note that the ordinance itself needed that slight amendment so that the in 2212-6, the yard requirements, in the next to last line where the word property appears, you should add the phrase adjacent to any property. Okay. And then go on with the text.
We'll have that as well in the official motion if this is approved. That's brought to you next month. We'll amend the language so it's all perfectly clear.
Just so the resolution shows correctly, let the record show that that's the text that should be adopted.
Do I have a motion that includes the revised text in respect to the Industrial General Zoning Text Amendment?
Sure, I'll make a motion.
Mr. Zimmer.
What's that?
You're closer.
Yeah, I guess.
Mr. Zimmer makes a motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second for Mr. Johnson. Does he need to read that?
I don't think so. I assume the motion refers to the
yes.
The text that's on the screen will be reflected in the minutes.
We have a motion and a second with respect to the motion about the Industrial General Zoning Text Amendment. We have a motion by Mr. Zimmer, second by Mr. Johnson. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. The last item on their agenda tonight is the second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak to anything of the Planning Commission about the county, come forward to the microphone, state your name and address, and you will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end the second public comment section. And if there's no objection from anyone, we will adjourn at this time at 7:52. We are adjourned.